As we approach the 2026 FIFA World Cup due to be held in Canada, the USA, and Mexico, it's good to know that Rob Nichols and his Fly Me to the Moon teams are continuing their excellent audio podcast for fans of Middlesbrough FC everywhere. Fun fact, back in 1876, Middlesbrough FC were formed by members of the local cricket club who wished to stay fit during the winter. Another fun fact, I'm American and have no idea if I'm pronouncing Middlesbrough anywhere close to accurately. It really does demand a second take, but as I'm not paid by the word, I'm going to leave it at this one.
So, is it a crisis? Is it a blip? Are the wheels coming off? Of course not. It's another Fly Me to the Moon production. And 1 point out of nine, it's better than naught out of nine, isn't it, Rob?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Let's be positive, Alex. We came back from 2-0 down to draw 2-0. We could have won it in the last few minutes of a fraction offside. A linesman that had like VAR vision to give that offside. He was quite right, but... So let's be positive. We can get back on. If that's our blip, then hopefully it's a blip that's over with. And then we can get to business on a Friday and beat Norwich. We all remember what they did to us in the playoffs the last time we were round. So, you know, we need to avenge that, don't we?
Well, they do say revenge is a dish best served cold, and it's fairly cold in April at present, so who knows?
It is cold.
To the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, we don't have Thomas Bartley, but we do have, I think, his dad, Chris Bartley, is with us. Chris, how are you?
Hello, Alex. How are you?
We're good. You're sounding as though you're coming through a sock at present, but apart from that, all's well with the world. I'm sure it'll be all on top form, because I was going to actually just praise certainly Thomas for an outstanding article that he's put together in the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, of course, the Norwich City game, in which he actually says parachute payments strapped in or chucked out, a whole new rich world that Thomas has actually put together when it comes to this particular thing. Discussions over the future of football have never felt so febrile, with the prospect of an independent regulator now tangible. The issue of football governments is now front and centre in the political debate. Does he get all this writing quality from yourself, Chris, or is that just a case of, well, it's obviously a Bartley legacy?
I'd like to take credit for it, but unfortunately, no, it's all I think it's all his own skills in writing.
Well, it's interesting stuff. And not only that, but it just gets even better. I mean, if you want to have a rationale for getting what potentially is the penultimate Fly Me to the Moon paper copy of the season, you've also got this fascinating centre spread, which is entitled Andy Campbell Leaving a Legacy, with the classic line, the girls know I want them to succeed more than anything. If they succeed, the club succeeds. If the club succeeds, then we all get acknowledgement at the same time. Who's produced this wonderful piece with respect to Andy Campbell? It's Sean Rye. Sean's back with us as well. Sean, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Alex. How about you?
Very good indeed. And again, looking to this centre spread, which we will focus on, actually, because you are a contemporary of this fresh-faced, flame-haired forward. I love the use of alliteration there that you put together in terms of Andy Campbell. Share with us, what are the key high spots that you got out of having a chat with the Campbellmeister?
Well, obviously, from a Middlesbrough fan's point of view, I grew up in those sort of exciting times in the 90s, and it was a natural thing to want to pick his brain about those times, of course. But I was really impressed with the passion and the way in which he spoke about elevating the level of the women's game. And we ended up tapping into that more than anything, really, because of the passion that he showed. And as most are probably aware, that he's not at the helm anymore, but I don't think that sort of diluted from the passion and the impression he wanted to leave and the mark he wanted to leave on that group.
Yeah, arguably, again, one of the more successful folk. Campbell joined Middlesbrough Women Football Club in 2021 and cited the unmissable opportunity to have a positive impact on the women's game. Of course, the likes of Rob and possibly Chris and maybe myself, we go back to the wonderful world of Marie Wieczorek, Rob, and I think she would certainly be delighted with the legacy of how women's football has really developed, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember back in the 80s that I was I played a small part in helping get Mary closer to the football club at that time. And she's a big fan of the she obviously she we know that she was a she was the captain and the manager of the of the then Middlesbrough Ladies at a time when they were even more part time than they are now, right? But and she also went on to play for England. Well, Chris knows a lot about her, but from all her work in schools, and you can ask him about that. But Mary is a big fan of Middlesbrough women, and she's on the touchline urging them on each week when they play at Stockton, and she's really encouraged by the changes that we've seen in the women's game nationally, but also locally how it's getting more organised, and I don't know whether Chris can say more about this, but she's certainly noticed the difference in schools of going around to, you know, working with boys and girls. And girls, just there's girls that they've got their role models as well, and not just in the men's game, but in the women's game. And it's you know, really exciting times.
I mean, let's hope the recent result against Australia doesn't actually set things back, but it's just another blip there. Chris, your thoughts on Marie Wieczorek and indeed her legacy, which Sean's just been alluding to in terms of how it's been picked up and run with as far as Andy Campbell was concerned, for a time at least.
We're actually being fortunate because at my school, St. Joseph's Primary, Maz has been coming in as a coach for the past 5 or 6 years, and I think she just can't believe the progress that's been made in the women's game, and there's the and I think the it's kind of strange, really, because I know that there was a lot said, and I remember Ian Wright saying about, I hope this has a real sort of, the competition last year would have a real knock-on effect and a legacy. But in primary schools, the girls' game has been going down really well. You know, the girls have the same opportunities regarding football as the boys, and for a, you know, for a lot of years, I think that the girls in primary school have had access to the same, like, high-quality coaching and the competitions that all the boys have had. So I think, you know, and Maz has been part of that because she's kind of can't really been well-known for the things that she's done with Borough Ladies, but also, like, playing for England, which I think is just impresses the children so much, really.
Well, certainly that's something with, I think, less than 100 days, just 90-odd days until the World Cup kicks off in Australia. It's something to actually look forward to, certainly in terms of how England having actually beaten Brazil in terms of the finalissima and, of course, winning the European Championship last year with, of course, Chloe Kelly, Manchester City, of course, Chloe Kelly. Sorry, I have to mention it, Rob, scoring the winner. Good stuff on that side of things there. But let's sort of return very briefly to the article. Sean, if memory, this is, I mean, being centre spread in Fly Me to the Moon is quite a significant routine. Are you quite pleased with that? Is this, you know, a case of another step on the way? It's a case of, yes, finally, I've made that centre spread package my own.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm never short of commenting to Rob how proud it makes me to be able to contribute and even just share opinions and thoughts with other Middlesbrough fans. I mean, that is enough for me. But to be part of the Flying to the Moon family and to have the honour, if you like, of having a centre spread, the trust that had been given, I can only thank him. So, yeah.
Well, as I say, we'd talk more about the centre spread piece, but as we always say at these points, and Rob would have it no other way, if you want to actually read the superlative Sean Rye interview with Andy Campbell, buy the magazine. Just go for it. It's quite simple. Just buy it. Likewise, for parachute payments strapped in on or strapped on or chucked out, the wonderful Thomas Bartley number. Likewise, it's page 8. Go and buy the magazine. But we won't sort of tease people. We will talk about Borough and, of course, the upcoming games, including, of course, the Canaries. Revenge is a dish best served cold. But it's brought us neatly round, Rob, to, of course, the Jimmy Flynn moment, where this time we obviously get the chance for Sean and Chris to effectively comment on our delivery of another Jimmy Flynn epic, this one entitled Mr. Football.
Yeah, Indeed, Mr. Football. It's a tribute to Tony Lee, who was a coach at Marton, the junior football club, for many years. I once went, I once accompanied Tony on a tour to the Netherlands with Marton Football Club, which was a really, it was a really interesting, eye-opening experience. And Tony was also well known as a manager of Whitby Town, Billingham Cynthonia. Before that, he'd been a footballer, centre forward for Leicester City and Bradford City. Scored a lot of goals, and he recently passed away. And we commented about him last issue, and Jimmy Flynn wanted to write this poem about him, so he sent this poem in. And in the fanzines, it's illustrated by, with a few photographs that Tony's son Anthony, who used to be a Borough junior himself, he sent some photos in to put alongside it. So shall I give it a go? Start off
I think
first of
so,
the
Ryan.
lines.
It's time to
Yeah.
continue.
Mr. Football. Tony Lee was a definitive Mr. Football, and to the beautiful game he gave his all.
In every fiber of his being, football was ingrained. He loved football with a lifelong passion that never waned.
Football was in his blood, coursing through his veins, and in the quest for football perfection, he took great pains.
As a football-mad schoolboy in 1950s Berwick Hills, he endlessly practiced intricate ball skills.
Skills that would stand him in good stead for the career in football that lay ahead.
He suffered heartache at the age of 15 when he was overlooked for the Borough Boys team.
A brilliant hat trick in a trial game, not enough for myopic selectors opting for big and tough.
A devastated Tony, a hard lesson learned, and into his memory the experience was burned.
In junior football, he made brilliant strides and attracted the attention of professional sides.
For Leicester City, he signed on the dotted line and kicked off a professional career fine.
He transferred to Bradford City for a club record fee, and a memorable move it proved to be.
A brilliant hat trick in his debut game ensured Tony's entry into the club's Hall of Fame.
For Darlington and Scarborough, he also played, and for the seaside club, unleashed a goals cascade.
When his playing career came to an end, along the managerial road, he did gloriously wend.
Whitby Town, the first to benefit from his expertise, followed by Billingham and Cynthonia on the banks of the Tees.
At Bishop Auckland, Spennymoor, Gateshead, and Celtic Nation, he further enhanced a formidable managerial reputation.
In Northeast soccer circles, there will forever be the memory of the magnificent Mr. Football, Tony Lee.
Ode to Tony Lee again, Jimmy Flynn doing wonderful stuff there. Your thoughts, Chris Barkley? Obviously, we need your educational input in terms of this. A bit of sight reading there. Was it up to speed? Did
I
Rob and myself do him justice?
think it was a fitting tribute to a great manager, really, and a sort of somebody who's, really respected in local football.
And obviously not related to Gordon Lee, the former Blackburn Rovers and Newcastle United man, or indeed
No.
Stan Lee, the impresario behind the Marvel Comics empire. Just saying.
Possibly not.
Anyway, Sean, back to yourself again. We started off this particular podcast by saying, is this a blip? Is this a case of we turn the positives? I mean, clearly Michael Carrick was very keen to stress the way in which the comeback from 2-0 down to secure a point and very nearly winning, obviously, on Easter Monday was a wonderful turning point. Are you optimistic now, or is it? I mean, we were talking in the last podcast about momentum. Is this one of those things where you think, uh-oh, things are beginning to stutter?
A little bit. I think it's fair to say before the match against Bristol, a point would have sort of represented a bit of a disappointment. Yes, we showed plenty of battling qualities in the second half. Yes, there were a couple of defensive fragilities, let's say, a couple of occasions where players possibly attempting to overplay. Now, we've got to be careful because I'm one of those guys that'll sort of suggest that I'm happy for us to overplay from the keeper, from play out the back and play expansive football and enjoy the kind of football that we're treated to week in, week out. So those mistakes will happen if we're playing high risk, high reward football. So we have to offer a little bit of perspective. Yes, we've had a little bit of a blip, but this is the championship, and Chris was quite right in his article to point out that we can sit there, and I've done it myself. Looking at all the different permutations, if A beats B, if C beats D, we could be here and there. So it is the championship. It will throw up results. I mean, I was looking at Rotherham playing Luton this weekend, hopefully with Rotherham doing a bit of a favour for us. And I was looking at their last few results, and despite sitting in 18th, Rotherham have taken points from Norwich and West Brom. So it is a league that will throw up those results, and I think we just need to roll with the punches and try and get that momentum going again.
It's one of those things, Chris, where, I mean, it's cliche to say in this league, anybody can beat anybody. But it still remains, you know, very much to the fore. I mean, again, are you ultimately optimistic that this is a blip and we're just already beginning to book our tickets for Wembley, because it looks as though those top two places are probably, I say not definitely, but probably out of reach at present? I mean, is it, in your own words, a case of the final run-in, keep on keeping on, almost quoting Tony Mowbray's classic phrase there, which indeed he used many a time when he was actually in the studio when we had one at Southside Broadcasting at James Cook University Hospital. He'd say, keep on keeping on.
Well, I think I feel a bit of this is my 50th year of being a Borough supporter, and I was doing a little bit of research before I came on tonight, and it's seven promotions, seven relegations, four playoffs and counting. And you kind of think that you should get used to this kind of pressure, but you never do. The next two home games are very important, because I think if we can get two wins, then we can go into the Luton game with kind of a lot of confidence, really. But I think we do need to deliver in the next two home games, because Luton will be a tough one on the back of maybe not having two successful home games, I think.
I mean, this is the critical point, of course, because it is a case of taking on board the City. I mean, we obviously had Bristol City with Nigel Pearce, that Saturday, got Norwich City. Then, of course, we have Hull City, which is arguably another one of those interesting derbies. In fact, I don't know, Sean, do you classify Hull City as a local derby, a Yorkshire derby? Is it a case of don't be crazy? You know, they're far too south in Yorkshire.
Yeah. Not for me, I don't think. I think there are far feistier games out there. I think we've got to really treat as many games as we can as a derby, ironically, in the running. We've got to really show that intensity. And I agree with Chris to a point that we sort of need to give ourselves that cushion again in order to not... I mean, there's, I think, 6 points separating us from the outside of the playoffs, which... You know, if we lose a game or draw a couple of games, that quickly becomes a bit of a sticky wicket in terms of the last few games. And all of a sudden, we're looking the other way. We were looking up, trying to catch. And if we're not careful, we can get caught by a few teams who are having that momentum swing that we desperately want in the final stages of the season.
I mean, one line, Chris, that I'd take out of your piece, which is the wise old owls amongst us knew it wouldn't be that simple. You're not sort of alluding to a secret fondness for Sheffield Wednesday getting promotion from the League One, are you?
No, just the wise old owls is just a kind of reflection on the years of hurt.
Bitter disappointment. Never mind. It's okay. Let it, you're among friends. It's important. I mean, just summing up the whole thing. I mean, you obviously talk about Norwich. They have a good chance of reaching the playoffs. Yeah, Hull City have really improved since Rossini took over, and of course you remember how they nullified the playoff charge last April. The away game at Luton will be very hard. Rob Edwards has taken them to the edge of automatic promotion, and of course Rotherham may still need points to secure safety. And of course, we finish with another city, that's Coventry, who performed well on limited resources. And I don't think actually, Rob, anybody expected Coventry to, you know, be doing as well as they have been, really, under Mark Robbins.
No, they're always written off, aren't they? And they're doing well to even be playing in their own stadium, of course. So that they've always been up against it. But he's done a tremendous job as manager, Mark Robbins. And they've got some very good players indeed, haven't they? They've got some really good forwards. So they'll be so every game, you're right, every game has got there's no easy games amongst them. They're teams that I guess Norwich are not really bang on form. So let's take that first, and we need to do what Michael Carrick is all about. And that if you go to Unpleasant Feelings, it's Uncle Harry's 300th Unpleasant Feelings, and all the way through it, his theme is the Michael Carrick, the watchword of taking every game, and not looking any further than the next game. And we do need to do that, don't we? We need to take care of Norwich on Friday before we start talking about Hull. And we certainly don't want to be thinking about Luton this early. But, of course, the fans have already got their tickets. They're already booking their transport. And some fans have already had their holiday, their Wembley hotels, even before the game was switched from the Monday to the Saturday. But I would never do that. I would never book my hotel that early, even if I had nowhere to stop. I just wouldn't do it. It's just not for something like playoff final. No way. It's so far away as yet. But yeah, even though we've got to take what Michael Carrick says and keep calm and just not look at the next game. Chris is right, isn't he? I mean, that we're having these two home games together. It's a real gift to try and get some points in the bank now, and if we can get those points, we very very difficult for anyone to catch us from below.
I mean, interesting. Norwich, the form is not too dissimilar to Borough's. Basically, just one win out of the last five. Borough likewise one win out of five. Two draws, two defeats for Borough, and Norwich City three draws and one defeat. In fact, the only side that seemed to be demonstrating some kind of momentum in the division are Preston North End, who've actually won four out of their last five. Everybody else, including Millwall, with two draws, two defeats, one win, and indeed Blackburn Rovers with three defeats, one draw and one win, all seem to be stumbling. Luton arguably just about hanging on in there and kind of making some kind of progression. Is this the kind of, I won't say traditional spring collapse, but is it a case of, you know, somehow we're just seeing the tightness of the division and the problems of the division?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I was just talking, Chris and me were talking just before, and Chris was saying to me that in some ways, even though it's been the longest season ever, starting in July, it also seems to have flown by. And I was suggesting that that's with the World Cup, where the World Cup was. It really did chop the season in half. I wonder if that's having an effect now. I don't know why it should do, but it could be. It's because it is very much an unknown quantity. It could be affecting teams. Certainly, Middlesbrough don't look. It's amazing we don't look the side that we did a couple of weeks ago. But can we get back to that momentum? You mentioned that Preston are the form team. I think Preston would be hoping anything that they do not get us in the playoffs. The amount of goals that we shipped past them the last time they played, and it could have been far more. We took our foot off the gas in a way. So but yes, is it anything to do with that break? Have a lot of teams hit the wall, or is it just a case of the tension starting to get hold, and the teams at the bottom are fighting for their lives, and there's something like there's the Warnock factor. It's not just Middlesbrough that he's done it to. So interesting.
Sean, do you think it's the World Cup? Is it fatigue? Is it anxiousness? Is it nerves? Is it Tuba Akpom relying upon too much? What are the thoughts for yourself?
I think it could be a little bit of everything. I think Rob's right in that it could be a factor, but it has seemed a little bit like fatigue has set in. But I also think we're at that end, towards the end of the season, where it is going to get tense. It becomes real for clubs now. They can see that tangible reward, and let's remember that you know the lucrative rewards on offer, they're all in there. And it's a bit like, to coin a sort of analogy with the Grand National, you sort of come into the elbow, you've raced through the field, they're at the elbow and you're all in the mix, and the rewards are so massive. And also the clubs at the opposite end of the league as well, you know, the danger of dropping out of the Championship and all of that means in terms of, again, finances and trying to claw your way back into the second tier. I just think it's getting very tense and very real for clubs now, and they can, you know, the pecking order, everyone's getting a little bit nervy.
Rob, let's return to Thomas Bartley's article on the independent regulator coming on board to actually deal with the Premier League and football in general. from that point of view. I mean, you've got a great range of things, and you've raised the issue many a time over the last few years, vis-a-vis parachute payments and so on. Do you feel as though what's being proposed is a possible fairer way of actually dealing with things? Or is it a case of, well, we'll just have to wait and see how quickly Wrexham can actually sort of plough their way up the leagues and actually sort of start playing us in the Championship or the Premier League?
I think that I think the financial fair play, as far as the Football League's concerned, works so much better than the financial fair play for the Premier League. It evens things out, but is totally destroyed by the parachute payments. There was a group of fans met Steve Gibson a couple of weeks ago, and I had a chance to ask him about the latest offers by the Premier League for payments to the EFL. And what did he think of it? And how would it be? Would they just be looking to help their own teams by giving it all in parachute payments again? And he felt it wasn't. He felt it was going to be distributed much more broadly. And he felt that that big advantage was going to go, and that clubs would also have to, in return, would have to be scrutinised year by year as to how they were doing financially. Which would stop a lot of the anomalies that are going on at the moment. I'm saying anomalies, but we've mentioned before Sheffield United's buying players without already having reneged on one transfer and getting another player in. Things like that can't be allowed to go on, but also it can't be allowed to continue with clubs owing people money going through the season because it's really that was Middlesbrough back in '86 that. That's why we were made to pay back every penny because it was seemed to be, and it was quite rightly, it's really bad advert for football if football clubs can't be trusted and that they don't pay their bills. But that's a lot of that is going on, isn't it? So I think Steve Gibson's of the opinion that there could be some sort of groundbreaking changes soon, which could really benefit the whole EFL, and that they'll never get on that parity, but he thinks with the Premier League, but he thinks that cliff edge might be that there might be some work being done and it might smooth it off a little bit.
Well, Thomas Spartley actually cites a study from Sheffield Hallam University in 2018, so pre-COVID, but they basically stated that clubs benefiting from payments were twice as likely to be promoted and much less likely to drop into the third tier, with, of course, the notable exception of Sunderland. Well, there we are. They obviously wanted to prove to be the exception in the rule as the first Bank of England club. And Middlesbrough again struggling against that scenario. Arguably Huddersfield as well, probably slotting into that place too. Chris, we're into our prediction time now, so let's go for at least just two games from this point of view. Jenny Finch has already sort of said she thinks it's going to be a 2-1 victory for Norwich for Middlesbrough.
Whoa.
I just corrected that. Chris, what's your view on the Canaries first and foremost?
I'm going for a nervy 2-0.
2-0. Interesting. Goal in each half, perhaps. Sean.
I was actually going to go the same 2-0. I'm looking forward to a more focused start, and I think we will be looking to eradicate those individual errors at the back and look forward to getting a clean sheet. I'm going to go 2-0.
And of course, it is the traditional 8 o'clock on a Friday evening kickoff to accommodate television, etc. Rob, are you also going with the 2-0 line?
Oh, let's go back to that to the old standard of 3-1. But you said the traditional 8 o'clock, Alex. I've admitted in the editorial how I thought that the last match at Bristol City was an 8 o'clock kickoff. I thought it was right up until 5:15 when I was still on the M5 at the time, and it was actually a 5:30 kickoff.
I was going to
Disaster.
save that to the purchaser of the magazine, Rob, but
Oh,
obviously you dropped it in there, which is fine, like exposure,
I've
but
got to, yeah,
still,
admission to
yeah.
make.
Curiously, a 5:30 just to kind of balance the whole Easter Sunday strategy out there. I think I might always go 3-1 and then 3-0 against Hull City. Sean, the Hull City game, which comes up in a few days' time.
I'm going to go for a narrow 1-0 win, but a win's a win. So if we can get 2 wins, I'll be a happy man.
And 6 points would certainly, I think, guarantee a playoff position, whatever happens to other sides as well. And Chris, your own thoughts on Hull City, given obviously your views about Mr. Rossinia, who's clearly actually putting the Tigers through more paces.
2-1 to Borough. 2-1.
And Rob, are you going to go traditional 3-1 again?
No, I think I'm It scares me this game, but I'm going to go for 2-1. Yeah, I think Hull are looking really good at the moment. He's doing a very good job there, but I'm going to go for 2-1. So 3-1 and 2-1, that'll do, won't it?
So the clean sheets won't be there as far as Rob's concerned, but
No.
the points will be. So, interesting lines from that perspective. Okay, Sean, any other highlights from the magazine you'd like to draw out to the attention of the listeners as well, given that we're recording this literally with the magazine literally hot off the presses, quite literally?
Yeah, as always, I think there's some great content in there, but Chris encapsulated perfectly how I feel as a fan anyway currently, and the chaotic nature of it this end of the season. So I enjoyed that perspective because it resonated with me. So yeah.
Excellent. And Chris, anything that you've sort of said? I mean, obviously, you can prove that nepotism is alive and well in the Bartley household, and so is obviously Thomas Bartley's piece is just magnificent.
I mean, it sounds as though I'm going right back at you, Sean, but I really enjoyed his Andy Campbell interview. It's quite a lengthy one, but it's really interesting. And I do remember him from his time as a player, but it's quite interesting to see his perspective as a manager, really. It's quite sad that it's come to an end, but it's yeah. I would say Sean's Andy Campbell leaving a legacy article.
Yeah, and I think I'd agree with that, actually. It's a really good piece and well worth reading in its entirety. So, by the magazine, Rob, how can people actually purchase a copy of the Norwich City fanzine Fly Me to the Moon?
Yeah, and I would also point out that an amazing piece by Robin Smith, who's through his research, has managed to pick out a Borough all-time 11 by looking at the very first league game that we had, and a player that played in that match whose career overlapped another player, and he's managed to get through 11 players from the goalkeeper to Stuart Downing at number 11 by the players that overlapped each other from, so he's gone from the very start to Johnny Howson. So
He has
that's
indeed got Tim Williamson, Andrew Ramsey, Frank Spraggan, Tony McAndrew, Colin Cooper, Johnny Howson, Bill Harris, Jackie Carr, George Cancel, Wilf Mannion, and Stuart Downing in there. Two of those players have actually been guests in the days of South Cleveland Hospital Radio, actually. Do you know which ones they might be, Rob?
It's interesting. I'm going to go for Tony McAndrew and Frank Spraggan.
You would be incorrect. What about yourself, Sean? Which one of that list? Tim Williamson, Andrew Ramsey, Frank Spraggan, Tony McAndrew, Colin Cooper, Johnny Howson, Bill Harris, Jackie Carr, George Cancel, Wilf Mannion. Well, we tried tapping the table. And Stuart Downing, would you say, would have been with us?
Colin Cooper, maybe.
You would be correct. Colin Cooper and Frank Spraggan would have been the ones who are actually there. Although I do actually have an autograph from Tony McAndrew from back in the day. Just another thought there. I think he went on to Chelsea, did he not? If memory serves.
Yes, and
Long
came back again.
before, yeah, long before Roman Abramovich was there, I think back in the day of Ken Bates. Now there was a person who actually knew where his financial eggs were buttered, or there were some bits and pieces. Okay, so people can obviously buy the fanzine at the game itself. We've got one more, I think, left in terms of the paper editions of Fly Me to the Moon.
That's
We
right.
will.
Yeah, so you can buy them online if you go to the website fmttmborough.com and click on fanzines. There's a fanzine shop there. So if you can't make the match, but look out for there'll be two of us selling at the match. So look out for us tomorrow.
And in terms of the podcast, it's looking highly likely we'll have two more editions left, one ahead of Coventry City, and then one, I think I might say, ahead of Wembley, unless you want to actually go for the other side of things. I'm just thinking about, where we're going on this one. But anyway, we'll talk about that as things develop. For now, Chris Bartley and, of course, Sean Wright and Rob Nichols, huge thanks. Rob, I think you know what we need to actually lead the team in now as we head out of another edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast.
Indeed, I'm sure Chris will catch on pretty soon. It is what we sign off the editorial as well in the fanzine is. So on the count of three, one, two, three, come on,
Come
Borough.
on, Borough, up the Borough.
Borough.